Hi, this is Manton Reese.
And I'm Daniel Jalkett.
And this is Core Intuition, Wave of Disbelief. This episode is sponsored by Buddy Build.
Well, Manton, I hope you don't mind. I just wanted to install a security update on your Mac, so I just logged in as root. And
thanks for that. While you're in there, can you fix all my bugs and release all the apps that I've been working on?
I went ahead and... Well, this is quite a 24 hours we've had. This is now, as we're recording this, it's Wednesday, November 29th, 12:45 p.m. I think it's less than 24 hours since this news came to light yesterday. It was like a wave of disbelief spread across the internet as people discovered and acknowledged and confirmed that anybody basically running High Sierra could... If you had access to somebody's Mac running High Sierra and it was, you know, logged in, you could get root access just by typing root as the username and blank as the password.
Leaving it blank, not actually literally typing blank.
Right.
Although that would be a nice little backdoor as well.
That would be. Try that one now. Maybe they, you know, so anyway, long story short, they fixed it. I actually, when I was seeing this unfold yesterday, I was just so in disbelief. I was like... very, very confident that this was going to have a fast turnaround.
Yep.
I wouldn't have been surprised if Apple had managed to make a turnaround yesterday. It's so bad. It's so completely horrible. And they didn't do that, but I'm pretty pleased that they released it. It's about 2 hours out in the wild now that they released this software update. And it's a very interesting software update because you go to the App Store and you go to updates and it says there's a security update, and I don't think I've ever seen this before. It says, like, the first sentence in the headline is, I think it will, I've already installed it, so it's not fresh in front of me. I think it said, install this update right away.
As soon as you can, I think.
Or as soon as you can.
I don't know if that's standard. It might be standard for security updates, and I think this is the first one we've seen, definitely on 10.13, but maybe in a while, because the security update is like 2017-001.
Yeah.
So maybe this is some new phrasing just for security updates in general. I was also not worried that Apple wouldn't, you know, get a fix out like as soon as possible. And in fact, to be honest, it didn't really bother me that much. And I think that's mostly because I work at home, and like if someone broke into my house and then, you know, got root access to my computer, you know, it's like, well, there's bigger problems at play. But, you know, I posted something to my blog, and it went to Twitter too, kind of implying that, like, yeah, it'll be fixed. It's no big deal. I mean, it is bad, but all software has bugs. And a couple people jumped in with, like, this is the worst security problem of all time in, like, computing history.
It's really bad. It's really bad.
You can make a case for that.
Well, okay, here you go, Manton. Let's talk abstractly about this so we don't reveal anything personal about your setup, but it is not unusual for people to use Apple's Back to My Mac feature to have access to their Mac at home, open and available to them.
Yep.
And from what I gather, this bug extended to the login apparatus for remote login. So I believe if a person had Back to My Mac enabled and you knew, then you could actually go log in to their Mac as root from remotely.
If you knew, like, the address or
right.
host name or IP or whatever. Yeah, I don't have that enabled. I usually keep all that disabled, SSH, screen sharing, everything, unless I need it. And then I, like, turn it on briefly and then turn it back off. And I did check to see if that was enabled, and it wasn't. Of course, I could reproduce the bug like everybody, like, easily. And it's just, like you said, it's kind of like stunning that, like, this could be missed because it's just so bad. But on the other hand, you know, like you said, like, we knew that Apple would fix this very quickly. I am not surprised they slept on it. You know, it's like they probably fixed it like immediately yesterday. And then they like said, like, okay, all hands on deck. Like, we're testing, like, type every crazy blank password, not blank, like, test everything. Update the automated testing that missed this somehow. And then we're going to sleep on it. And then first thing in the morning, you're going to be in the office and we're going to submit this. And I'm glad also to see it's going to be an automatic update, but it's not quite yet. So like, gives them a little more time. Everyone's going to click update. Then later in the day, it'll be an automatic install, assuming that no other issues are, you know, uncovered in the next handful of hours. Everyone will get this without having to click anything. And so that's also great. So real limited window. But yeah, like I mentioned, I mean, some people were pointing out like, yeah, it's fine for me. I'm at home. Like, I don't have remote access enabled. You just have to break my window and stuff. And I'm pretty careful in coffee shops and other places I work. But like, if you went to work this morning and you were in an office or at a school or some work environment where it's super common to have a computer on your desk and no office door or no, you know, someone could just walk by when you're getting up for coffee and type root and they're in. That's pretty bad in environments like that.
Absolutely. And so anybody, I mean, I unfortunately, the nature of this bug and the nature of bad people means, you know, let's be honest. There are now some number of compromised Macs out there whose unwitting owners aren't, you know, tuned in to the pulse of Mac security somehow. Like, we are. So we are, like, you know, we are, and still, like, I mean, I don't think anybody compromised me, but I think I might still go. Once I was saying to you, like, somebody, you know, if so, I don't know 100% for sure if I have backed my Mac set up right now. So I might go check, and I might then go back and look at the logs and see, you know, did somebody log in?
Super unlikely. Right. But I guess, yeah, I mean, with this kind of stuff, it doesn't hurt to be extra paranoid. Yeah. I certainly don't blame you. I'm not going to look through any logs. I don't have time for that. And I didn't have any of this enabled, so I'm extremely confident that no one hacked into my computer.
Right.
But little extra precaution and paranoia, it's okay.
I mean, that is the thing, though. So, like, if somebody has like an enemy at work or something,
right,
and they're and they're a bad person, and you know they knew that this security flaw was available, and their enemy, the person that they wanted to be cruel to, didn't know, then I mean they could have gone and compromised the Mac and made a new account and gave it admin authority, and then they're out. And then now they have an admin account on that Mac, even after the update's fixed, you know?
You know what I do at coffee shops or like co-working places? And this might sound silly, but like I do, if I'm in an environment that I kind of look around, I'm like, everyone looks kind of trustworthy. I don't worry too much about like getting up and going to the bathroom, especially in a co-working place where everyone's paying to be there anyway. And no one's going to just like swipe my computer. But the thing I do, even at coffee shops, is if I have to get up for a couple minutes, I turn the brightness all the way down on my computer. And maybe that's silly because it won't stop someone from grabbing it and running out the door. But I feel like it will stop like a random person sitting down and creating a new user account, because you try to wake up the computer and it doesn't wake up because just the screen is black.
You got some high security there.
Yeah. I don't know. It makes me feel a little better. I always do that. It's like I'm about to get up and turn the brightness all the way down. The screen's black.
It's like putting a ring of fishing wire around your bedroom like door. It's like somebody who wants to get in is still going to get in, but you're going to hear them. And it's going to slow them down.
Slow them down slightly. Yeah. Right. So slow down that slightly. So if someone sits down and tries to enter the root password and create a user account, they will be dismayed for at least 30 seconds. And that'll be enough time for me to come back and chase them off. I don't know.
That's good.
This is such a strange bug, though. It's like, how did this happen? And like, you know, you were at Apple and you know, you worked on a lot of like diving in, troubleshooting, like figuring out like obscure bugs. Like, how was this introduced? And
I'm so curious.
Like, we don't know. We're speculating, but like, who do we blame for this? Is it the programmer that introduced a bug because there was some, I don't know, just like some bug or some interaction between different layers and APIs and side effects that they didn't think about? Was it like the QA people who just completely missed this because it wasn't part of either automated testing or like the checklist that they go through when there's a security change, like make sure you can't log in as root with a blank password. Like, where, how did this go so wrong in this case?
I don't know. And I find it very, I'm curious. I know there's these people who diligently sort of like do binary diffs of, you know, releases. I think I'm counting on somebody else doing it because I just installed the update and I'm not really up to speed with how I would go about doing, you know, a diff.
Right. And it's not your job. I mean, you don't want to spend days like... No,
right. I'm kind of in the middle of a lot of things right now.
Yeah. We'll get to that later in the show.
I am curious though, to see. I'm sure some... I think I remember in the past, like with like the go-to fail type, you know, bugs and stuff. People inevitably get like binary diffs and they figure out what, you know... Well, I guess with go-to fail, they had source code, so they didn't need it. But like I've seen... analyses before where people will like basically reverse engineer and then you do a binary diff and then of course you disassemble and you get down to the point somebody's going to answer the question how this bug happened. Mm-hmm. And that it's hard to imagine that that's not going to be embarrassing for Apple somehow.
Yeah.
Because like you said, I don't really understand how a bug like this happens in the context of overall security on the system being, I think, pretty reputable.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
I know there's some security experts who they really shine a laser focus on some problems they see on the system, but Macs are basically pretty well known, regarded as being pretty secure. You know, we got things like File Vault, considered pretty secure, I think. And it's hard to imagine that in 2017, macOS had any designs in place where a naive mistake of some sort could cause this hole to open. You know, Like it just seems like it's like, it's kind of like how, like, you know, the kernel on the Mac like keeps all of this like low level OS based stuff like by design can't be reached by like, you know, so called user space code. I'm just sort of surprised that somebody was able to make a change between 10.12.6 and I guess 10.13 that there's even a mechanism that could be exposed to cause this bug. That's what surprises me. So I'll be really curious when third parties figure out what went on to make this bug happen. I'd be really curious to know what it was.
Yeah, and it's like we like that macOS 10 is based on Unix. Like that was a nice bonus that we got in the transition from classic Mac to macOS 10. But I also kind of wonder if like maybe we've moved past some of the, like, is just the fact that there's a root account, is that kind of a relic? Like, do we even need that anymore? And I was really interested in the update, like what was the update going to do? And so before I installed the update, I enabled root access and I specifically set my root password to blank, which to be honest, I'm not sure should be allowed, but I did that. I enabled it. I install the update and the update disables root access. Like that's the first thing it does.
Right, perhaps
the only thing it does. I mean, there may be some other changes, but like that's just that alone is a good thing. But like, do we even need this anymore? Do we even need the concept of a root user? Like, should this be even more difficult for people to accidentally mess up?
Well, I think that's what I was sort of getting at when I said I was surprised that there's a mechanism in place that allowed this to happen.
Yeah.
Because for years now, you know, I think probably for historical reasons, it's not totally simple to just get rid of root.
Right.
It's sort of like it's the root account. It's the root of the whole you know, hierarchy of permissions. One of the ironies of this bug was that people who were ostensibly less secure by enabling their root account were totally immune to this, you know, like, cause they would have enabled it and in doing so they would have, you know, theoretically or, you know, presumably they would have set a real password on it. So this bug did not affect, as far as I know, this bug did not affect people who had, for whatever reason, gone out of their way to enable root and give it a password. And that's a practice that Apple has discouraged because the theory, at least, is that if you leave your root account disabled, nobody can log into it because it's disabled.
Yeah.
Right. And so I don't know. That's what's so fascinating about this to me is that this bug somehow not only let people log in with root as a blank password, but it enabled it in the process, I guess. So, one of the, like this, it was unbelievable to people that this bug existed. And then I think what's turned out to me and to many people who are now discovering it, what's turned out to be even more unbelievable is this has theoretically been, this information has theoretically been available to people since November 13th through an Apple developer or an Apple
support.
Is it developers?
It's the support forums. Yeah. No, it's not developer forums. It's just right. The general forums where people are always posting kind of random, I'm having an issue. And this thread, I can't believe it. But when I saw this thread, there's no indication on first glance, 2 weeks ago, that this has anything to do with the blank root password. But if you dive into it, someone jumps into this discussion and says, to fix that, just log in as root and guess what? Try a couple times and it's no big deal. You can just get in. And they say it in a matter of fact, this is the workaround. You can do this. And so how did they know that? And like how long has this issue been known just among the sysadmin community maybe, or just random Mac? It's bizarre, but some people have known about this for weeks, and only now as it spread on social media and whatnot, that it's really blown up and become an emergency.
Yeah. Well, so what's here is I found it so fascinating that it was so nonchalant. And the username is, Chetan177, Chetan177. We'll put some links to the forums in the show notes, but the person who wrote this was so nonchalant about it. So people afterwards, starting yesterday are just like, hey, how the heck did you know this? And they responded and they said, they responded this morning at 6:49 a.m. They said, hey guys, didn't realize this was a full-blown security issue. It said, basically they say that they ran into the same problem. They said, I messed up my login credentials. And so they were basically offering a workaround for a problem they had also stumbled onto a fix for. And they say, as to how I stumbled on this, the answer is simple, pure frustration. I'd read on one of the forums wherein a user suggested we try using root for username and leaving the password field empty. I did. It failed. Out of sheer frustration, I tried again, and voila, the blankety blank thing unlocked my admin account, much to my relief. So this is where I was confounded by the nonchalant explanation of it, but this is starting to add up for me because the thing is, root with a blank password is a kind of convention for when you, I seem to recall in the old days, if you installed a Unix, it would be that way by default. It's set up that way for the administrator to commence with actually setting up the system, right? Mm-hmm. If it's not blank, it's some default value. These days when you set up I don't even remember what happens if you set up Ubuntu or something, but it's something similar because obviously you got to be able to get into the system. Right. So,
nowadays if people use a server that a virtual host or something where they're managing this for you, they set the root password for you. You can't just boot up a fresh Linux distribution and have a blank thing. It's they set the password for you and then you don't have to worry about it.
Okay. Yeah. So I can totally see how this person maladapted some advice from a different context. It's they're probably searching, they said, they're frustrated. They're probably searching furiously for ideas and probably got some cross-contaminated advice from somebody who was giving you advice for getting into root on some old Unix system. And they tried it and then they tried it again. And that was kind of a key to this bug. It seemed like you had to try it twice. You had it rejected you the first time, and the second time it let you in.
Yeah, that's a weird aspect to this as well.
Yeah. So I don't know, now I don't know if it's a coincidence that this person who basically the person who somebody posted to Twitter making this public, you know, fully, so to speak, fully disclosing the bug on Twitter. And that's how everybody caught wind of it yesterday. This comment by this person in the Apple product forums seems to have just gone unnoticed by anybody who could make a fuss about it, or anybody in Apple who could have, you know, proactively fixed it before it became a huge thing. And I could see why you and I were both looking at it, Anton, and we were just like, it's just a bunch of advice. And so, and it's the kind of thing where it's like, if I was glossing over it, I would just think, I don't know what this person thinks is going to work, but this is not how security works. So,
yeah.
You know,
and I should say I was wrong. It is the developer forums. And so not exactly the same free-for-all as the regular support forums. And you'd think maybe it would be a little more closely monitored and someone might read that.
Yeah.
I can see now, you know, as you read that back and as I'm kind of scanning through it, I can see now how the person who found the issue could believe that it was a side effect to the other issue they were having and not a widespread security flaw. It was just like, if you're having this weird issue that we're describing this thread,
yeah,
the side effect is you can also skip the root password, but maybe it only affects a handful of people, not like millions and millions of people,
right,
which it turns out it does affect. Really interesting bug. And, you know, I feel like we have to cover this a little bit because we talked a few weeks ago about like the aspect of making mistakes at Apple and getting fired.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think there are consequences for this? Do you think it's because it is super serious? We don't know if a lot of computers have been hacked because of this, but like, what do you think Apple should do other than the immediate fix, which they've done, and the follow-up, like investigate like where things went wrong, which they probably already know?
Yeah, I think that if there was any negligence involved in this bug, and I fully admit that that might be hard to, you know, put a fine point on that, like what constitutes negligence in the commission of a software bug. If there was negligence that Apple management can justify as being, you know, by whatever their standard is, negligent, I think somebody should be fired for this. Maybe multiple people. I take it very seriously because of the conundrum I described early in the show, that we have the situation now where I am confident that a non-zero number of Macs of unwitting victims has been compromised, and people are now vulnerable to bad people because of this bug. And it's hard for me to imagine this bug existing without some serious commission of negligent behavior somewhere in Apple. I don't know what that is exactly, and that's why I'm so curious to know how this bug happened. But, you know, like, for example, Manton, here's an example. Okay, sandboxing in the app sandboxing, by policy and by technology, prevents a whole range of negligent acts from occurring, right? So like my upcoming version of Mars Edit is sandboxed. It is technically impossible for Mars Edit to say, remove files off your desktop without your permission. I guess what I'm saying is, if I were to ship an update of Mars Edit now that did somehow remove files off your desktop, I don't think I should be, you know, in the context of like Red Sweater, I don't think Red Sweater should fire me for that, because it's not, you know, it's not negligent. It wasn't negligence on my part. It was some mistake in Apple's sandboxing system. And so I use that as a sort of like a metaphor for what I think. I think that there should be similar safeguards in Apple's software that should have prevented this from, that should have like made it like by policy or by technology either impossible or just like exceedingly unlikely that this bug could happen. And so I'm in that way, I look at this as something where like this type of bug shouldn't have been able to happen in 2017. And the fact that it did happen, and the fact that it wasn't caught by quality assurance measures, and the fact that, I don't know, a range of things, makes me feel like Apple has some splaining to do, you know, and if Apple has some explaining to do, then the people within Apple who were responsible for this, unfortunately, I mean, you know, I'm aware that people listening to the show probably know specifics about this, and I'm not trying to be cruel to anybody at Apple, but I think they probably know as well as anybody, if they were had some part in this, that there was some fundamental breakdown that shouldn't have happened that caused this bug to occur.
Well, I don't think we'll see any more explaining from Apple, because Apple, if they don't have to say anything, they never say anything. But they have put out a statement, and I find it really interesting because they don't apologize very often.
No.
And I really like this statement because I feel like it's very honest and says, like, we found the bug. We immediately started working on it. We're, you know, we regret the error. We apologize. They use regret twice. Regrettably, we stumbled with this release of macOS. I mean, I actually really like the honesty in this short little statement. I think that's all we're going to get. But it is interesting, like, if we were working at Apple, like, how we would approach this, because there was probably a breakdown at a couple levels. It wasn't just one person, because if the engineer introduced the bug, yes, that's a problem. But then you have the manager and the QA person, and like you have other people that also missed it. And so without being there, it's hard to know if there's an obvious, like, that one person is to blame. And it's one of those things that's probably multiple things went wrong for this to actually get shipped.
Yeah. Well, I was curious, after I installed the update, I looked, you know, folks, if you don't know this, you can check out what was installed when you install an update in the receipts folder. So like in /system/library/receipts, there's this Apple, it's a .bom file. It stands for build of materials. And so if you look there, you'll see this file, and it has this 10.13 supplemental update, blah, 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 .bom. And if you use the command line tool lsbom, you can look at the list of files for like whatever installer did. And I was kind of thinking that when this software update installed, I was thinking it was going to be like one file in one framework, you know, whatever it is, it's going to be this one little thing. And I don't know how much this is going to require somebody, like I said, doing the code diffs. But I'm kind of surprised that, at least according to the build of materials, it's pretty limited, but it's several frameworks and several frameworks and the directory utility app itself. It's all related to Open Directory stuff, but it's some private frameworks. It's a user event plugin thing. It's some public frameworks, Open Directory framework, directory service framework. Now, I don't know if every one of those was actually substantially changed or if it's just something like, as part of the build process, whatever one thing was changed, it changed a header file that caused all these other things to rebuild. Maybe when they make a fix, maybe if that it's everything that rebuilt somehow just gets included in the update. I don't know. But it kind of surprised me and helps explain why it wasn't released, you know, within hours. If all of these separate frameworks and code, you know, modules were actually changed to fix this. So
yeah,
have to see.
Yeah, it's fascinating. I was going to kind of close the discussion out by asking another question, which is, you know, what are the chances that this was done on purpose? It's not something I had considered until someone else brought up the idea, and it seems extremely unlikely. But it's possible that this is like the worst, stupidest backdoor anyone has put in software. As I read the statement from Apple, though, I think no. I think that if they put out a statement like this that, like I said, looks pretty transparent and honest, I feel like there might have been a clue in there if this was like a bigger problem, like not an accident. Like there might've been some little clue, like, you know, we're investigating and we're like conducting a thorough, you know, blah, blah, blah of the whole team. And like, you know, I feel like there would have been a little bit of a clue.
Yeah.
But instead we get, you know, as soon as our security engineers became aware, we started working on this. So I just bring it up for completeness because we've covered every other angle, but I think probably not. Probably this is just an accident.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm the one that's talking about going and checking the logs on my Mac. So I'm pretty paranoid thinker. We live in this world now where there is a huge monetary value to backdoors. I like to think that the vast majority of engineers wouldn't participate in that market, but somebody is, and you know, things do get intentionally introduced. I'd also like to think that the culture of Apple somehow is less, you know, vulnerable to that. I just don't know if that's true. I hope that if and when these kinds of things are done intentionally, that the people who do them get caught and they get fired. Speaking of fired, obviously that would be a fireable offense.
Well, yeah, that's beyond a fireable offense. That's like criminal.
It's like a criminal, right?
Behavior. Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know. I tend to think and hope that it's not, but when it is something so, so glaring like this, it sort of makes me wonder. Like on the one hand, it makes me think, no, why would they make it so obvious? Like you said, this the biggest, stupidest back door. But on the other hand, I kind of feel like there's a value to the fact that so many of us, when we saw this reported, were like, no, there's no way.
Yeah.
And like, I remember like my first thought when I saw it was like, this person just is mistaken. Like they must have somehow like set up their Mac to have root with a blank password. Mm-hmm. And it was just, that was part of the like jaw dropping of everybody who tried it and was able to get in. But yeah, I don't know. So we should wrap this up, but, just to kind of address that and sort of address what you said earlier about whether Apple has had their last word on this. I think some of that's going to come down to what third-party analysis reveals. Now, if third-party analysis reveals, for example, like this doesn't seem to be the case because like all the libraries I think that were affected are Apple's own stuff. But like if it were something weird like you know, like a standard like BSD package that people could like show like source code from the standard BSD package and Apple's had like mysteriously changed to have this weird bug in it, then I don't know, that might like raise, that might, there are scenarios that could unfold that would put Apple in a position where I think they felt like they had to say something else about it. But hopefully for Apple's sake, that won't happen. As curious as that would be, hopefully that can be their final word on this and just try to move on and try to get some security credibility back, right?
Well, yeah, and even beyond that, I think that this is not a great rollout, High Sierra. Like, no. People have been concerned about updating long before this. You know, as we talked about on the show, I was requiring High Sierra for micro.blog, and I had to change my mind. I had to go back and allow 10.12 or 10.13 because there were so many people that haven't updated because they were concerned about... there's a couple issues.
There are a couple issues. I've been telling people not to update. There's a huge, to my mind, problem with preferences not persisting correctly or being reset. I've been telling people, like, hey, if you haven't updated yet, wait till 10.13.2. And this, like, I think what you're getting at, supporting what you're saying, this is going to make, I'm not sure that we should recommend 10.13.2 either. Like, I don't know. Like it draws into doubt the whole, it's one of those things where it makes you wonder if this got into 10.13, what else got into 10.13? I don't want to be negative or disparaging about the folks who work on this software, because I know there's so many great developers, great managers, everything, but I'm sure they're asking themselves the same question. Like, how did some of these things happen?
Yeah. And is this just part of a larger problem of rushing this out and not having enough resources, which is something we talk about all the time? You know, ever since they switched to this yearly update cycle where no matter what, it's ready to go out the door, you have to wonder.
Yep. Okay, folks, this week we are glad to be sponsored by BuddyBuild. BuddyBuild is the continuous integration, deployment, and user feedback service built specifically for mobile development teams. It's trusted by thousands of companies like Slack, Reddit, and Firefox to reliably build, test, and deploy their iOS apps. With BuddyBuild, teams are saved from spending hundreds of hours writing and maintaining build scripts, debugging flaky test infrastructure, managing provisioning profiles, and manually deploying to the App Store. Instead, you can focus on crafting applications your users love. See why thousands of teams love BuddyBuild. Start your 3-week trial at BuddyBuild.com today. Thanks to BuddyBuild for sponsoring the show.
Yeah, you know, that part about, like, don't waste your time on the build scripts, that just appeals to me so much because I'm definitely in that camp. We've talked about this before with build servers. I just don't want to deal with it. I don't want to have a build server. I don't want to have some Mac Mini in the corner that's dealing with this for me. I don't want to deal with that stuff. I want to be able to build and ship my apps as quickly and as easily as possible without a bunch of moving pieces. And so something like BuddyBuild, you offload all of that and they take care of it. And it's worth going through the trial if you're thinking about checking it out, because it's such a smooth process for setting it up. You sign up and it just kind of walks you through, and in no time at all, it's checked out your code. It's building your apps on its servers. Definitely check it out. You go to BuddyBuild.com. You can start a free trial and see if it'll work for your projects. Thanks to BuddyBuild for sponsoring the show.
Well, Manton, speaking of rushing things to completion, hopefully I won't introduce any root authorizing bugs in Mars Edit 4, but I am rushing to completion. We've been talking the last couple weeks about you and I each sort of like keeping our eyes on the ball and trying to get to a place where we can call our projects shipped. I made a pretty good progress with Mars Edit since we last spoke. I actually had a really great experience with the App Store because, you know, we were last talking last week, right before Thanksgiving. And after we talked, I sort of realized, oh, wow, yeah, Thanksgiving, App Store is usually like kind of shut down, or not shut down, but it's like you kind of have the impression like app review is going to be slower. People are probably on vacation. And then I sort of realized, I think I said on the show that I was aiming to get done with the app by December 1st. I haven't really talked about it publicly, but just between you and me and everybody who listens to the show, I think I'm going to try to ship it publicly next week, because, you know, this Friday is December 1st. Next week is a good time to ship an app if you can, yeah, when you finished it by this week. So I did this really clever, in retrospect, I think, thing, which is probably a lot of listeners already know this trick and they probably apply it. But if you don't, I encourage you to try this because it's really reassuring. Took a little bit of the weight off my shoulders of worry about how things are going to play out. What I did is I got Mars Edit 4 into a state where I was not happy for it to be shipped, but I believed that it looked like something that Apple could approve. And so I actually got it all together, called it 4.0, took the beta, you know, off the version, uploaded it to the App Store. And there's a lot going on here since Mars Edit 3, because like I said, I added sandboxing. You know, that's technically required now. I've been skating on the grandfathered in status of Mars Edit 3 for years now. Sandbox, so you have to justify any special entitlements you're using. I also have made a move in this update to a freemium approach, so I have to justify the in-app purchases that I'm offering, and that has they have a completely separate, you know, review status. So I started to realize, sometimes when people do this, their review takes like a week or more. This was right before Thanksgiving, and I was like, I need to get this review process started, because I suspect that an app that has been reviewed and is, you know, already in the store, that the next update will be a smoother review, or, you know, faster. Anyway, long story short, I submitted on Thanksgiving morning, and I was like kind of laughing at myself because I'm like, oh, well, this will certainly not get reviewed anytime soon. And then to my surprise and delight, I got a rejection on Saturday. So in just 2 short days on the Thanksgiving weekend, I got a review, and it was a bummer that it was a rejection, but the good news was the rejection was pretty straightforward. It was like some entitlements that I had inadvertently added that I'm not really using. Like I asked for access to the movies folder, and like Marzetta doesn't let you browse movies particularly yet. So I think it was, you know, stuff that I don't really need. So I took all those off, resubmitted. And then on Monday afternoon, I got an approval. Boom, ready to go. Like pending developer release. So at this point, I could go in at any moment and flip that switch, and that version of Mars Edit would suddenly be for sale on the App Store. I'm not going to do that because I had some last minute, I think, really important changes to the app. But now I'm in this place where, like, I want to release next week, I think. I need to get another update into the App Store pronto so that I can be reassured that it's going to get approved. But it's kind of this funny place to be in because the technique I'm using, it's manual release. So when you go into the App Store, you say, I want to release this manually. I don't want it to be automatically released. And that's what gives you the flexibility to choose to then cancel the release after they've approved it and resubmit another binary. But the downside to this is you can't like rest on the fact that you could always just submit another app. You always have to count on waiting for that review process again, because like now let's say I put in my updated version of the app and I'll be all ready to go, and then if they approve it on Friday, let's say, I'll be sitting pretty waiting to release next week. But then if I discover something I'm gonna have to, you know, and I need to resubmit, then I have or if I even just want to resubmit, then to do so, I have to take that one that's already approved out of the running. Like I can't just like rest on the ability to go back and say, no, I want to release that after all. You have to literally reject it yourself and say, nope, that one's gone, invalidated, and then submit again and then wait for the review. So it's a little bit stressful, but overall things are coming together, and I don't know, I feel like I'm going to ship next week.
So. I think you are. And it's definitely a big relief, I think, that it went through review and you didn't get flagged for any weird in-app purchase thing. I mean, the things that we talked about over the last couple of weeks that honestly I was a little bit concerned about, like, because you don't never know what reviewers yeah. going to think about your app. And I think you have good arguments for the way yep. you're doing it, but I think there are counter arguments too. And I would yep. not have been surprised to see it rejected and you would need to do some kind of in-app purchase change. So I think that is a huge relief that you're through that. Yes. And I mean, they could change their mind, I guess, in your next build you submit, but probably not. Sounds like you're probably safe. If you don't yep. introduce any new bugs, I'd be shocked if the next one doesn't go through review in a few days and you're good to go.
Right. And you know, I'm it's one of those things where it's like, okay, if they were to change their mind and suddenly not approve this, I don't know, maybe that's where like App Store rage takes over and I just leave right. the App Store. So maybe it doesn't matter at that point.
Yeah.
But as it stands, I'm pretty happy with my approach to try to, you know, keep working with the App Store. I think that I may reap some benefits of that. Feels good. It's such the culmination of so many years. I can go all the way back to like 2012, I think, that's when sandboxing started.
Wow.
Like I remember the WWDC where we had like a powwow with Dan Wood, the iMedia folks, you know, for how they were going to tackle sandboxing with this open source media browser that I use. And I just remember it was like I was looking at the list of things I'd have to do. And, you know, it wasn't overwhelming, but it was a lot. And then just to think that now I'm finally going to have, and I've been living in this weird limbo land of like I said, I've grandfathered in, but technically you're not supposed to add any new features as a non-sandboxed app. And I've gone through a lot of version numbers for a non-sandboxed app. I mean, I think I've gone from like 3.4 to like 3.7.11 now or something. And I might be wrong about that. Maybe I've just been milking the dot updates, but sometimes there's been some fairly close to featureful changes. And it's just going to be nice to be able to update and release without... I'm always sort of worried that Apple's going to reject one of my updates. And of course, that could happen even if it's sandboxed. But sure. I'll be living like within the lane. I'll be driving within the lanes again, I guess.
Well, and that's, to me, that's the story of Mars Edit 4 is like, everything's updated. You know, it's like, you've got the features you've been working on. You've got, you know, the sandboxing thing in the Mac App Store. It's like, you've caught up to where you wanted to be. And now...
Yeah.
It's like, it's almost like, hey, where can I go next? You know, the world right, is open, yes. But you have to get to that point first. You have That's to ship right. it. Yeah. You have to have the new stuff. You got to be sandboxed, you know, new in-app purchase. But like once you get there, then it sets the foundation for the next, you know, handful of releases.
Yeah. People can probably relate to this. Some people probably can't relate to this. Some of you listening probably can. It's, as a longtime indie developer, my identity is so tied up with my work and my software that I'm having like, I don't even know how I'm going to feel feeling like when, let's say I ship on Wednesday next week, let's just say, that'd be a week from today. I don't know who I'm going to be on the day that this is released, or let's say the day after. I mean, the day it's released is going to be crazy. I'm going to be answering emails and promoting and all this stuff. But when I get a chance to sort of sit down and think, this is a weird feeling. Everything in my life is not taking place under the sort of shadow of needing to finish Mars Edit 4. And I don't know how that's going to feel.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, you say like, who, you don't know who you're going to be. I mean, obviously you're going to be the same person.
It's a little exaggerated.
But I hear what you're saying though. And I think it's not who are you going to be? It's like, what's your business going to be?
Yeah.
Because for the years you've been living under the same basic premise for like the versions of the app and like the business model. And, you know, maybe sales are down just because there hasn't been a new big update in a while, but like basically everything's the same and you're changing a lot of things at once. And this kind of happens with traditional kind of Mac software, no matter who you are. It's like, if you change a lot of things at once, you need to take a step back and reevaluate what that means for your business. And hopefully it's good. You know, at Release Notes conference in Chicago, there was a great talk where they're going through Ulysses and like its kind of spikes in sales and new releases. And you can kind of tell when someone walks those through, especially with graphs of like, here's how sales improved when we did this. You can kind of tell that some of those milestones are business changing events. Like one day, everything's one way. And then the next day, things are completely different. And, you know, maybe it won't be that drastic for you. Maybe it'll just be like business as usual. Hopefully it won't be worse. Hopefully it'll be an improvement. But like, there's something interesting about those big releases that they do have the potential to change things. And I'm scared of that stuff a little bit. Like it's exciting, but I'm also a little scared of it. And I've kind of done the exact opposite. I've realized with micro.blog as I've been rolling it out, I realized like there is no big launch. Like I'm at like phase 5 of the rollout, you know, from like Kickstarter people to invite people to now I'm pretty soon, probably tomorrow, I'm going to turn on this idea where I'm going to let anyone join, but only like 100 people a day. And I'm going to do that for a couple of weeks. So it's like this really slow launch over a year. So there's not a big, like one event, like now everything's different tomorrow. It's more like things gradually change and gradually improve over time. So the Mac software, I think, is unique in that way. It's kind of a fascinating thing that's always been there for Mac software. And maybe it won't always be there as people move to subscriptions, but right now, that's still the case for a release like Mars Edit.
Yeah, well, I mean, when you're talking about these, like, you know, things are going to change. Like, it's from the level of, you know, hopefully financial, but all the way down to we all have like any of us who does our own software and supports it ourselves, we have like these things that we've been answering the same question. More than maybe we wish. Some of my text expander snippets I've used more often than I wish. And every time I use them, there's a little pang of like, oh, I wish I didn't have to respond this way. And some of the ways my business is going to change after this is released is I won't ever have to respond. Some of those text expander snippets are going to be able to delete. And of course, I'm going to have to make new ones, but, you know, for different issues. But and the things that people come up with to complain about or suggest or ask questions about are going to change. And, you know, it's not like my fundamental job of responding to people is going to change, but there are a whole horde of specific things that I have gotten really tired of responding to customers with. You know, you can imagine some of them, Manton, like things I've responded to you in the past, like, hey, when are you going to support authors? You know, setting the author on a post, or when are you going to support, you know, post kinds? And being able to say, oh, if that question comes in, instead of having to say, I'm sorry, I don't support that, I'll just be able to say, oh, yeah, I support that. It's right there. That's going to be a huge change. There's a bunch of that kind of stuff. And a comparison for you is like, you probably have to deal with some number of people right now who ask, hey, can I sign up? And I don't know, do you deal with that? Do people ask, or you just, and then you just have to say, sorry, it's not ready yet.
Right.
And when that day comes, when you're past this phase of like staged roll in, you're going to say, your new answer is going to be, of course you can join. We would love you to join. Right. Here's the link.
Get your credit card ready. Click here. Yeah, absolutely. It removes a whole class of issues whenever there's a big change like that. That's exciting.
Yeah, I've just got to like push ahead now and get through it. I'm trying to like, I'm trying to stay disciplined, and I'm trying to prioritize things sort of rationally. So like I talked about getting that submission into the App Store was really smart, because not only did I get that early approval that I hope, knock on wood, will stay, but there were a whole class of things that were wrong by Apple's standard. Like, you know, when you submit to the App Store, they give a bunch of automated, like, sorry, this is like the wrong bundle ID, wrong da-da-da.
Yeah.
There were more of those things than I expected, and it took me like a good day to fix some of them. You know, and so that's the kind of thing you don't want to find that out on the Monday before the Wednesday you're hoping to ship.
Right.
And so I sort of realized like there's a bunch of these things where we need to like be smarter about how we use time, because like the information, will my app be automatically rejected when I just try to upload it to iTunes Connect? The answer to that question is available today. You know, you don't have to have a app that's ready to sell. You just go and say send to iTunes, and it tells you. And so in retrospect, I wish I had done that like 6 months ago.
Yeah.
And like another example, in-app purchases, I've been thinking about doing this for a long time, and I've been putting, you know, I've been putting off doing the work of it because I find it the most tedious, kind of least fulfilling. Anything related to the mechanics of sales, I've just find, I don't know, I have a hang up about.
Sure.
But come to start doing it and testing it, I realize, oh, it would be handy for me to have, for instance, an in-app purchase for a trial purchase that has expired, you know, for testing purposes. Because like I'm going to give people these trials that last for 14 days and then they expire. I can't get one of those. But if I had started this even just like 3 weeks ago, then I would have access to that. So there's some stuff like planning ahead a little bit seems to be, I would advise people, if you're going to work with in-app purchases sometime down the road, maybe start working on them sooner than later, because you might, it's a little thing. Like I can get by, you know, without having one of those expired receipts, but from a testing point of view, it would be nice if I could fully test it, you know?
Yeah, all these reasons are, just remind me why I'm not doing, you know, in-app purchase and just like people ask for it with Microdotblog, and I want to help them. And in some cases, people literally do not have a credit card and can't sign up to Microdotblog and in-app purchase, like because of the way their Apple account works or whatever would fix this. Mm-hmm. And I want to help them, but I cannot deal with this. It's just, there's so much, it seems simple, but it is not simple to go through everything you're doing and then also support a completely different subscription system with coupons and trials and different plans. And like, it's a lot of complexity, and I just have to keep sitting on my hands and not being tempted to add this, because I know I just don't have time for it.
Right. Well, yeah, you have a good reason to focus on what you're doing, and there's nothing that prevents you down the road from deciding that that becomes a priority and right. then adding it later. So.
Yeah. All right. Well, good luck. You know, it's possible when we talk next week that it's possible you'll be in the middle of this release. So that's exciting.
I know I'm going to have to figure out how to make time for the recording in the middle of possible upheaval. Maybe I won't release on Wednesday or whatever. Maybe we won't record on the very day that I release. But
I think we should do an extra intuition episode live as you're hitting submit, you know, release to the App Store or update your website. Man. So we can go through like what you're thinking as, you know, emails come in and
like, I don't like to cry. I don't like to cry on podcasts, Manton.
that's what listeners want. They want the drama. They want the excitement of a new software release. This is years in the making.
I know it is. Oh boy.
Well, good luck.
I hope, hopefully
if we don't talk live, you know, hopefully it goes well. Yeah. And hopefully listeners by the time, you know, this next episode rolls around next week, they will be able to upgrade.
Absolutely. And folks, I know we have a lot of our great subscribers listening to this show. A lot of you haven't subscribed, and that is fine. No pressure. It would be great, though, if you want to, if you do. And just in case you're curious, there is another Extra Intuition episode, short but sweet. And it's kind of, again, it demonstrates the example I think we were hoping for with the Extra Intuition, that we just try different things that we probably wouldn't really talk about on the main show. So check it out. Give it a listen. And of course, you can always get in touch with us on chat.coreint.org in our Slack team. And other than that, Manton, I'm just going to go back into the races here. Good luck to you as well this week. Probably making steady progress. And it's great to hear you are adding more users. I don't know. Maybe next week you're going to open it up to everybody.
Yeah, what do you think?
Maybe.
We'll see.
We'll just keep the dream alive.
Yeah. All right. Thanks for listening, everyone. Talk to you next week.
See ya.